Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. And friends, welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we have something special for you. We brought a special guest. We like to bring the best of the best, the experts, you know what I mean? So we have Nikki here at Kaleesi. How's it going? How you doing today?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing great. As I think you need to emphasize, though, it's at Kaleesi.
Sorry.
Kale underscore Easy. Right.
You know, right. I had back in the day, so Nikki, I had a kale shake that I want to find the video somewhere, and it was just full. There was so much kale, and it kind of turned me off of kale for a while because it was just too much. But now I'm back. I kind of eased in with some baby spinach. I'm going to get my greens in. My wife is all about the vegetarian lifestyle, so that's what we eat, that's what we do. So now there's kale in my fridge, first time in years. So just want to say that I'm back on the kale train.
You're probably gonna have to tell the story of how you got the handle Kaleesi.
So this was I don't know how many years ago. This is such a boring story. I was on holiday in the Lake District in the UK with my friends. And I think we were playing Game of Thrones Monopoly. And I'm big on eat your greens, vegetables are great for you. And my friends were taking a mick out of me. And it literally, I think one of them said we should just start calling you Kaleesi. And that's just how it stuck. That's where that came from.
That's great. It's cool.
Literally think it's awesome. Yeah. And so the other big thing too. So this is your handle for your TikTok.
And yes. Instagram, right? I think it's both.
And Instagram. Yes.
Yeah.
So I found Nikki on TikTok. I was just scrolling through and, it's one of those things where this is kind of the way I've found TikTok works is you're scrolling through and something pops up in your feed and you watch it, you hit the like button. And then you're scrolling through your feed again, and then the next day or whatever, a video from that same creator pops up, and so you watch it, you like it. So by the third or fourth time, typically is okay, then you just hit follow, and then it was just video after video, and I was okay, I'm just gonna message her, and I tried to message you on TikTok, but apparently you can't message people on TikTok unless they are following you.
Okay, and
So I actually typed up the message that I sent you on Instagram, which you can, and I actually sent it, and then I realized on the thing, luckily you had responded immediately. You were this sounds great, because I realized how stupid that message was that I sent you, because I'm hey, I your content here on TikTok is great, but I sent it to you on Instagram, and I was well, now I look like a moron. So it worked out.
I just assumed that you'd clicked through, because I think I've got the link on my TikTok to my Instagram. So I assumed you just clicked through from that. So it didn't look stupid at all. Don't worry.
Okay. That's okay. I think about half of everything I do looks stupid. So anywho, Nikki, you do great content on TikTok. Just diving through a lot of people's questions and everything, just sort of about Game of Thrones and the Song of Ice and Fire, the show. I think you said you sort of consider yourself, you know, on this show, it's like I always joke that I'm a Targaryen loyalist. It sounds like you are a Lannister loyalist.
Yes. I thought I would get a little bit of pushback for that. Because a lot of the stuff I post is very pro Lannister. And I know that they're diabolical. And I thought a lot of people might come after me for sort of defending some of the things that they do, or at least trying to justify. But there hasn't been any. Everyone's been really, really nice, which has been shocking, but lovely. But yeah, I'm definitely in the Lannister camp, I think.
Awesome. Okay, well, that works out great because, yeah, what we're talking today is we're going to do sort of a just House Lannister Winds of Winter, like theory prediction kind of guide. And we're going to take a look at obviously the big three, Tyrion, Cersei, and Jaime, but we're going to start with Kevin Lannister and sort of what we think the fallout of his death is going to be. Ez and I try to use, not always, but just in some cases, we look at the show as sort of like some level of what happens in the show has to be true. Like it has to be an outline, like a
frame, like
even if it's like a loose framework, like
yes,
some level of it is going to go down that kind of path. But and then some seem like it's just there's no way. There's obviously some. There's no way it's even going to be close because like Sansa, for example, is not in the role of Jane, you know, Poole, who's like Arya Stark, all that stuff. So House Lannister, though, I think could maybe go down something, but there's still a lot that's totally different. So that's just, I guess, somehow how we sort of frame our mindsets, but not that we have to, but just sort of in the event we go down that route, that is kind of, I guess, something that's always in the back of our mind. Right. Yes. It happens. Yep. So, okay. So we'll start with Kevin Lannister. So at the end of Dance with Dragons, I mean, talk about total change from from the show, because in the show, Kevin is one of the ones that's blown up in the Sept of Baelor. Kevin Lannister also in the books is way more important than he is in the show, like almost a totally different character, where once Tywin kind of dies, he steps in and he is this patriarchal overseer of the family. And he's really the one making a lot of decisions, and he's doing a lot of great political maneuvering, I think, really to set House Lannister up. And honestly, he might be, I guess, the figure to look at. There's all these political moves that he was planning on making before he dies. Like you see that he's in the epilogue, right, of A Dance of Dragons, and then Varys ultimately kills him. But he's thinking about, well, you know, who was it as that we were talking about last week that he was planning on bringing back the Merryweathers, right? Hey,
bring
them back.
Orton. Yeah, Orton Merryweather.
All of these figures we could bring back, and then he's killed.
Yeah.
So now Cersei has lost another sort of key Lannister figure that's running the show, and it feels like everything, so all of that weight is about to fall on her after she's just come back. So Cersei's going to be like probably the most exciting to talk about. But so just thoughts, we'll start with you, Nikki, since you're the guest, like what do you think the fallout sort of Kevin's death is going to be?
Do you know what? Part of me thinks that Cersei is going to enjoy it because let me try and get my timing right. So Joffrey dies. Then we lose Tywin. And she asks Jaime to be Tommen's hand. And Jaime refuses. She then goes to Kevin. Like it's the best idea that she's ever had. And of course, I would come straight to you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. And Kevin's response is no, because I know you've asked Jaime. Mm-hmm. And they have this back and forth. And eventually he agrees on the condition that Cersei goes back to Casterly Rock. And it's pretty much says to her, you did such a bad job with Joffrey. You can't stay here. I cannot trust you to keep an eye over Tommen. So I will become Tommen's regent. You need to leave. And she doesn't do it. So I think after everything that's happened with the Faith Militant, Cersei's going to be terrified that Kevin's... So Kevin's come back to clean up her mess, basically. I think in her mind, she'll be panicking, okay, well, what's Kevin going to do to me? I think if you remove him, I think Cersei is going to see that as an opportunity to take power back for herself. She's got no sort of hindsight, bless her. Everything mm-hmm. she does is just a mistake. So, right. yeah, I'm not sure how she's going to spin it, because I think Varys' intention was to either make it look like it was Tyrion, to either wind up Cersei, or have the Tyrells think it was Cersei herself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'll be interested to see how Cersei takes that one, but I think she'll use that as an opportunity to kind of get her power back.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think.
Go ahead.
I think that's interesting that she would think that. And that's a great little recap, by the way, too, because it's this whole it is a mess. She's absolutely, you know, created this mess, and she does want just her brother there and the whole thing. And it's you know, then he goes off and does his thing. At first, Kevin's like, he's got to get his house in order and help Lancel out. And then, you know, once Cersei is taken, yeah, we got to go back and make things right. So that's a really, really interesting point. You know, it kind of does. Matt said we would maybe drift into the show, but I almost wonder if it does catapult her into like, well, there's no one to check her. You know what I mean? There's really
right.
like, and actually it's what Varys wants anyways, which is chaos. Cersei right. is chaos. Like, just she is already doing exactly what Varys wants. And yeah. it's almost one of the reasons why Varys sort of hints at the idea that he, like, he likes to, you know, he helps Tyrion. Once Tyrion gets in, I wonder if there's actually more to the whole, how Tywin and everyone knew about him bringing Shay in, because again, Varys is seemingly friendly, but Tyrion provides too much stability. He's too, like, you know, he's doing things the right way and makes sense, and so does Tywin. So that's not what Varys wants. Varys is like bragging at the end, and people debate whether or not this is true, or is he just, I don't know, he's bragging to Kevin, isn't he, about Aegon? Like he's like, yes. talking about, yeah, young Griff and all those things. And so I feel like this is what he wants. And so, yeah. So to Nikki's point, Cersei will gladly step in here. And it's the crossbow. Like there's the bolt to the chest, right? Similar to how Tywin died. I think, is there a Lannister mark or not a Tyrell? I feel like there was something else planted, and yeah. I have to go look it up, that might indicate that it was someone else. Like there was Varys, just the way this was conducted, I think is to point to various, you know, people that would create mistrust between Cersei and this person, or more just paranoia about Tyrion, maybe.
Isn't
yeah,
because
Kevin, I'll go. No,
oh,
go ahead.
Sorry. Isn't there a plant in Tyrion's cell after he's freed? Someone leaves a coin, one of the coins yeah. that Olenna Tyrell carries around with her, so that Cersei thinks, oh, yeah. right, well, the Tyrells have done this to start him. That. Snowball. So yeah, that would make sense if there was one with Kevin as well.
Yeah
because Varys says real quick, as yeah. You know, that he, when he kills Kevin, he's, you know, he bears him no malice, but he cannot allow Kevin to undo Cersei's misrule.
Yes.
So it is mm-hmm. Varys saying to Kevin, he's like, look, Cersei's doing such a bad job, we can't have this,
we can't mess this up.
We can't mess yeah. this up, man. She's sabotaging herself.
Yeah. Yeah. She's doing exactly what they want. Because it is. So it's one of those things where I always accuse. Well, I don't accuse. I love George. George R. R. Martin is my, I say, let him finish the books. But sometimes I see the story going outward. You know, I just keep seeing these threads just going out. This is one moment with the Kevin situation where, if it is true, and we're getting a connection between Varys and Illyrio, and we're starting to understand their plot and their scheme, it's starting to kind of bring things back together, and we're starting to get this idea that this is what they want. This is the path forward for young Griff, Aegon, what have you. It's just to cause all this chaos, and there's all these supposed Targaryen loyalists, House Dairy, and so on, who will be around ready to answer that call when young Griff marches in there and takes over, which is another thing we can talk about later. But I think, the Kevin situation is a big deal. The other thing that's a big deal is Jaime's proximity to King's Landing, the fact that he's not there. So it is just Cersei. You know, it's not like there's some other voice of reason who's there with her that's a family member. It's just she's all kind of bristled up in terms of, like, protecting, you know, her family. I mean, even though Kevin kind of slights her here and there, she would trust him more than she would trust this person or that person. So she does go to, I mean, approach him at one point. So now I think she's just going to be seeing, you know, I don't know, little Tyrions or Tyrell plots all over the place.
Yeah. So here's the, I got the
there we go.
The text, you know, the text pulled up here. So, right. So what happens, right, is it's kind of interesting because Varys comes in and he tells Kevin, you know, I thought the crossbow fitting. You shared so much with Lord Tywin. Why not that? Your niece will think the Tyrells had you murdered. Mayhaps, of course, that's mm-hmm. the word to let everyone know that, you know, that's it's sort of a lie or anything. With the convenience of the imp, the Tyrells will suspect her. Someone somewhere will find a way to blame the Dornishmen. Doubt, division, and mistrust will eat the very ground beneath your boy king, whilst Aegon raises his banner above Storm's End and the lords of the realms gather around him. And then he goes into it being Aegon, Young Griff, Fagon, right? You want to get on that route too. And then he tells him he's been shaped for this whole deal.
Yeah. It's great.
So yeah.
Well done, yeah. Derek.
Yeah, I know. Varys is much more developed in the books, obviously, than he is in the show, where he's just doing it for the realm, right? We'll look at Jaime. We'll kind of shift gears here, because you were kind of bringing up Jaime, because Jaime's kind of in the middle of really, I think, all of this. Whereas, like, you know, Cersei's very on one side. Tyrion, obviously, he's on the other side of the world. And we'll kind of talk about them all, obviously, because they're all connected. But so Jaime, right, he's out and around doing stuff, right? So the way his kinds of ends is after settling matters at Raventree, Jaime and his men head back to Riverrun. They make camp at Pennytree, where the locals are still wary of travelers and King's men and will not allow Jaime's men to enter the Holdfast, right? Because they're trying to take Riverrun. Jaime decides not to follow the advice of Kenos of Case, who recommends that he storm the Holdfast. While at Pennytree, Jaime receives an unexpected visit from Brienne of Tarth. She tells Jaime that she has found Sansa, who is a day's ride away. She claims, however, that Jaime must go with her alone or else the Hound will kill the girl.
Yeah. It's
totally
real serious.
Yeah. So we'll go the opposite direction. opposite direction this time. What are you thinking is going to be like Jamie's sort of arc in Winds of Winter?
Yeah. And this is, I'm excited to see what Nikki thinks on this too, because I kind of wonder if it's going to go, you know, like he's on this redemption arc. Is he going to learn how to, he's getting better with his left hand, right? Non-sword hand and his training and stuff, but it seems like they're going into I'm very confused about this. I don't know. I don't think that Brienne,
right. The audio. He says it three different ways, like
Brienne of Tarth is going. I don't know. What is she going to actually deliver him to Lady Stoneheart? Or along the way, does she have another plan? Because I've wondered a lot about, like, is Thoros of Myr going to do something? Is he going to stop this? Is he going to try to, you know, intervene in some way or the other? You know, because the Brotherhood Without Banners is kind of split, fractured a little bit. There's just a lot of killing going on over there. I don't see him going there and dying. I don't see him going and being, you know, killed, right? I kind of like, you know, the show takes him even further north, and he seems to be this sort of hero who might contribute in some way, whether it be a commander or even just as a great swordsman, left-handed. I think that'd be really cool. And maybe he and Brienne get closer. That's possible. That I think there is a closeness there between them. He gave her the Oathkeeper. Is that right? The sword. Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't really. I see him going further and further away from Cersei, which allows Cersei just to kind of keep like the bubbling madness and the chaos to continue. To the point where if he ever does return, it is interesting how the show did that, like that all this has gone on and then still in the end they're embracing or whatever. I don't know that's going to go down, but I feel like he's going to have a shift in some way. I I really have no idea what he's gonna. I mean, what George is gonna do with those two, with the brother sister relationship there. But I feel like he is going to go into the more of these Northern Riverland slash Vale slash Northern affairs and be in it somehow because he's been taken into it. Like Brienne has taken him there, not because he wants to. His job was just to come up here to River Run and, you know, deal with the Blackfish. So, yeah, I honestly don't know where I take him, if I take him all the way north or not. I'm really interested just to see what happens with Lady Stoneheart, because I just don't think that Brienne's going to do that, just hand him over, you know, to her. Nikki, what do you think? I don't know.
I did a little video about this, actually. So, again, it's pure speculation, and I'm happy to be challenged on it. So,
give it to me.
So, it's interesting what you're saying about going back to Cersei, because the last thought Jaime has about Cersei in A Dance with Dragons is he realizes he's got to go back soon, and he just doesn't want to. It's kind of like, oh, God, I really don't want to do that. And then I think Brienne shows up in the next couple of pages. And I don't think Brienne would be able to go through with it. I feel like there's going to be some conflict because she's obviously sworn an oath to Kat to protect Sansa, etc. But that's what she's doing with Jaime now. And I feel like their bond has grown to a point where I feel like Brienne recognises that there is a good, you know, there is goodness in Jaime. And I wonder if Jaime is genuinely going to start asking, like, speculating, like, oh, right, okay, so we're gonna get Sansa. So what do we do with her now? How do we make sure that she's safe? And that gets Brienne thinking, like, oh, he genuinely does want to keep her safe. And I'm about to lead him into a trap where Lady Stoneheart's just gonna kill him. I can't do this. So I wonder if Brienne's gonna fess up or if Jaime's gonna figure it out. But I don't see her walking him in there and him either not knowing or her sort of keeping a straight face. I don't think she'll be able to do it.
Yeah. Can I just real quick interject? Because I just had a thought here. Like, and this is what we do, Nikki, sometimes. We roll down these rabbit holes here.
Rabbit holes.
So there is, like, there's this whole bit where, like, Jaime, it's, like, one of the best lines, and I can't quote it right now, but it's, like, the idea that which of the oaths do you keep? You know, which of the, and then she has Oath Keeper. And so she has this oath to Catelyn, who is dead. This is Lady Stoneheart, a vengeful spirit of her, some sort of whatever. Not necessarily that she would be breaking, I think, the oath to Catelyn. Yeah, totally different, right?
Yeah.
And I also think it goes more to her character development, her being more dynamic and saying, I get it now, Jaime. I see the choice that was put before you. This is not to fulfill this oath or whatever is not necessarily an honorable thing to do. And I think before she was caught by surprise, you know, Brienne was caught by surprise and she's got Pod there. She's taking care of him. So she agrees to go along with this for a time. I think even if she does bring him all the way there, she could get a sense from other members that maybe this is not what they want, or maybe she just fights their way out of there. I don't know. There's going to be something that clicks and turns over. And I guess even from that moment, too, I wanted to bring up the idea that a lot of you were talking about, what does Jaime think about? He thinks about returning to Cersei. And even prior to that, he's thinking about how he wants to do a better job defending Tommen and be a better, like, commander of the Kingsguard and all that kind of stuff. He's really into that. That's really where he's at. So he could, if he, like you said, Nikki, decide, all right, we got to figure out the whole Sansa thing, go along with Brienne for a while. Or what would draw him back would be this idea of not really necessarily Cersei, but Tommen, where they're under attack. That's my job. That's my, then he's back into, like, I got to fulfill that oath and protect my, it's almost like a redemption situation where he now can defend the king, because Robert didn't really need the defending. Joffrey did, but, you know, that was, you know. Right.
Yeah. You know, another thing I like what you said is about Tommen, because the show sort of gives us a lot more of Tommen with, like, the High Sparrow kind of befriending him and sort of influencing, but none of that's in the books. So the idea that Tommen could even go down that line could be totally different. Like, I mean, there's so many potential scenarios. If Cersei still blows up the, if Tommen doesn't kill himself like he does in the show, which I think Ez and I are pretty big believers is not going to happen in the books. What if Tommen is like that figure that sort of realizes Cersei, if she does, say, blow up the Sept of Baelor and kills Margaery, like if it goes down that route, Tommen could say, like, you know, because he's a lot younger. No, I don't like you. You just did this. I mean, kids are, you know, you take their toy away, they get upset. Now you're going to take his like wife away. I mean, he's going to freak out and lose his mind. I don't think he's and he's not going to kill himself. So if Jaime goes back and Tommen is there to say things to him and influence whatever, that could definitely rip them apart. And then of course there's Marcella, who's still alive right now. That's gonna change his direction too. And not that I want to shift gears, because I want to stay on that, but real quick, the language used is kind of interesting in the last little bit of Jamie's lines here. So when Brienne walks up, he doesn't just see Brienne. He scrambles to his feet and he says, oh, let me, I'll put it up on the screen here. He scrambles to his feet. My lady, I had not thought to see you again. Gods be good. She looked 10 years older than when I saw her last. And what happened to her face? That bandage, you've been wounded, you know, a bite. And then she gives him Oathkeeper and he says, I found it. But it's sort of like, starting to be like, I don't know, you know, he's looking at her. God, she looks 10 years older and her face is hurt. She's already like described in the books to be like way uglier than obviously she is on TV, because Gwendolyn Christie plays her and she's, you know, Captain Phasma, she's freaking gorgeous. So is that going to be like something too? That is going to like, maybe he doesn't find her. Like, you know, there's that like hints of attraction throughout. Is he going to not find her that way in the books too? So, I mean, we could dive into that after, but I just wanted to bring it up just since I had it up here.
Because one of the things I was going to ask Nikki is the idea. So there are theories that like that Cersei might go back to the Rock, might go back to Casterly Rock or stay in King's Landing, that people believe different things. And it's like, what would move her there? What would take Jaime further north? You know, like those types of things, that because you can go almost any, like there's so many different directions that you can go, which is also why I think it takes forever to write a story like that. I think George knows where it's going to go, but like at the same point in time that he's got a hint at those things and he's letting people kind of figure it out. The foreshadowing's there. The breadcrumbs are all there, right? So for me, I like to think about what would take Cersei. It would maybe be like, if Jaime does go back to King's Landing, it's him saying, no, we're under siege, or if there's a way to get her out or do whatever. He's got that tactical mind that would, if they're overrun and there is no way, family first, save people if he does that. But if he's also not there, she could be taken prisoner. You know, there's a ton of different things that could happen. What do you think? Any thoughts on where they might go? Like just Cersei or Jaime or... Kind of sticking on those two.
Do you know, that's the problem. There are too many variables. It depends on what Griff or Aegon, whichever way we want to call him, depends on what his plan is. Because he's just landed at Storm's End with half an army. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder what, we know what Dorne are going to do. They've been sort of playing the long game. We know that Dorin's just found out that Aegon's alive. I want to know what the Tyrells are going to do, because they're traditionally Targaryen loyalists. So I think that's going to be the deciding factor. So I went down a rabbit hole on one of my videos, and it was to do with, if Tyrion was still alive, how would he handle that situation? I'm interested to see what the Tyrells do, because they're meant to be loyal to the Lannisters, but we know their loyalty is quite easily bought. I don't really know what else to say on it, because we could speculate for hours.
Right. It's definitely interesting. And there's a lot, I mean, there's a handful of characters like that. Because even using like the framework of the show, it's like, okay, like, just for example, like, okay, John's probably going to get resurrected. Stannis and Ramsay are going to do their thing. But then you've got a handful that are not anywhere close to where they are in the show. You know, like Sansa. It's like, she can go in tons of directions. Young Griff doesn't exist. Jaime, oddly, is actually where he's at in, mm-hmm. in the show before we go off book. He goes to River Run, and then he goes back to King's Landing. But part of that is actually a kind of cool scene in the show, I thought. And I remember the trailer getting hyped for it was when Jaime shows up at like the step of Baelor, and he's got like this Lannister army, like we're about to take over. And of course that is totally changed. So the faith also seems less powerful in the book than they did in the show. They definitely did a good job of making them sort of like a one and a half season really villain. So with that, if Jaime is going to go ultimately to meet up with Lady Stoneheart, which I think is possible and likely, because obviously, you know, Brienne lies and says that the Hound's going to kill her. Mm-hmm. We don't know. You know, the Hound, I think, is the gravedigger. I do think the Hound is going to come in and actually be part of something to deal with the faith, but that's not going to be Jaime's arc. Then, yeah, I think your other scenarios are Jaime goes to Storm's End first, or maybe Storm's End is over by the time he's done with Lady Stoneheart, and then he has to go down and deal with the faith slash see what's going on with Cersei. And his arc, I think, is going to entirely depend on whether Marcella is alive and whether Tommen is alive when he does show up to King's Landing. Because I do still think we will get that sort of confrontation like we saw in the show, where he's like, okay, Cersei, I'm like, I'm out. Like, I'm done with you. I don't know that we're going to have a dragon pit and all this other stuff. And, you know, like all this other stuff that happens first. But I do think that he will go down there and Cersei will kick him out, assuming Cersei lives through the next book. And like Young Griff doesn't say, like, take over that. And we just move into more of a, it's now Daenerys and Young Griff, Jon Snow story.
Yeah. I think too, George said, I don't know where this was. Maybe it was an interview or something that he did. Cause we got to finally see in the show Casterly Rock. So we had a character. I think he might take us there. Whether it's through, because isn't Jane Westerling heading back that way, I think, yes. at some point. Yeah, she's heading towards there. So maybe we'll see it through a different character. But I, you know, there's some speculation that we might see one of our Lannister folk over there. Because we never have really, really, really been there. And it's a place we've heard so much about that I think it'd be cool to explore in the book. And I just don't know which character he does it through, though, you know?
Yeah, because in the show, the only time we see Casterly Rock is when they pull a double fake, right? And they, okay, we're going to go take Casterly Rock. Well, we're not here, so deal with it.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I don't think that's happening at all.
Right.
Okay, well, do you guys have any more, anything else on Jaime you guys want to do before we hit, just go hardcore into Cersei?
Well, The only other thing, and I've not really done a whole lot of looking into it here recently, but like all that stuff that happens, you remember all of those like the weird visions and dreams that he has on the Weirwood stuff? Yes. Like that stuff's kind of crazy too. When you look at that to see maybe what he's dealing with internally and who he's, because I looked it up and I could be wrong, but the person wearing the Hound's helm right now isn't, I think it's either Lemon Cloak. It was that Biter, right? Or Rogue?
No, I think it is Rorg. I think it is Lemon Cloak.
Okay, so I think he's like wearing it now. So like this is, I mean, these are some of the folk that he's going to go back and see. There's been great speculation as to like who is Lemon Cloak. That, like, literally the theories, I can't even keep track. Matt, we did like this whole thing with like who is this the secret identity thing that we did, Matt, weeks back. So because we think of these characters who. I often think of the characters who were around during the time of Robert's Rebellion and could tell us more about the Tower of Joy, could give us insights or secrets about things that happened during the year 280, you know, or 283 or whatever it was. when all that stuff was kind of going down in King's Landing. So I'm interested to see if he runs across a character like that. Like if Lemoncloak is secretly somebody else and he is right now wearing the Hound's helm, and that's maybe where Brienne is taking Jaime, then we have
she could even think it's the Hound.
Yeah. So because we don't know, right? I mean, that's that he does take that, and it's Thoros who says, no, you know, you probably shouldn't. So it just to me, but people speculate that he was a former, like he has this lemon cloak that was once a white cloak, right? That he was once a Kingsguard member, possibly. That's a theory. And then you have Jaime, a Kingsguard guy, going possibly to see someone like Lemoncloak. I don't know if those all are going to pay off. And this is where you get into the crazy tinfoil stuff, Nikki, which is what we wade into. And it's just a sea of tinfoil. But I'm all for it. You know, I'm like, okay, maybe there is something there. Because this is a guy like who's been there, speckled in with the Brotherhood, and has seen a lot, witnessed a lot. And who knows? Maybe he's more significant than we think. And just the fact that he has that, the Hound's helm is interesting. And Brienne's taking him there. So I don't know. Just thoughts, random stuff. We don't have to take it anywhere. It's just we sometimes throw out those bits for people to, you know, go read it again, go experience it and say, yeah, is there something there? Or could you go that route? Because it's kind of fun to speculate.
Okay. Let's dive into Cersei. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is like where things like she's such a like huge player. So ultimately, like, you know, we know she does her walk of shame. That's like the big moment. Still dealing with the Kettle Blacks. They're still there. Lady Tyana, right? Cersei's going through like a lot of emotional sort of stuff going on with all of this. And she's introduced to her new Kingsguard champion, Robert Strong. And then so finally, Cersei dines with Tommen's regent, her uncle Kevin, who has been trying to repair the damage Cersei has done. She requests that Lady Tena, Deanna Merriweather, attend again, her innocence is proved. Although Kevin has no news of Jaime, Cersei seems certain of his safety, believing she would know if we were dead. Later that evening, Varys has Kevin and Pycelle murdered to keep the realm in chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is a crazy, I mean, just, you know, Cersei is let loose here. I did something, when was this? Just the other day on the whole Merryweather situation. Matt,
right.
you and I were talking about that.
Yes.
And the company that Cersei keeps, I don't know if maybe I'm wrong about this, but it does seem like, that they might turn on her or that there's something else going on. There's a great theory that I never even knew about, and I'm not going to go in detail on it, but that, how do you say her name? Is it Tyna? Tyna?
Tyna.
Tyna, yeah.
Just roll with it. He probably says it five different ways in the audiobook, so it's fine.
Yeah, I have no idea. So anyway, she's the one who's like sleeping with Cersei, you know, and really kind of just close to her. But she never brings her child, Russell Merryweather. She never brings him or whatever. And I stumbled across this that awesome theory that maybe it was a Robert bastard. That maybe he's a Robert bastard. And somebody went all the way back into there's a reason why she wouldn't want, you know, the seed is strong and wouldn't want to see him, and that we might see him later. This is what George does, right? It's very odd that numerous times she refuses to bring the child. Why? And it seems like, is it Orton, her husband, possibly gay, and wasn't, you know, there's all sorts of crazy stuff with the people who are around Cersei also being, were they bought? Do they work for Littlefinger like the Kettle Blacks at one point? Do they work for the Tyrells, Varys? That's the other piece that's kind of hard to sift out is who was working for who around Cersei, who's actually loyal to her. And really, they want to put family first. And that seems like the smartest thing that the Lannisters could do, which is to trust only their family. But then the way they treated Tyrion was so awful that it's ironic that he ends up being a part of their great undoing, if you will. So, yeah, I don't know, just some random thoughts on Cersei. But yeah, Nikki, what are your thoughts about, like, just, I don't know, maybe the people around her, or I know you kind of said that
Well, I think one of the big parts of Cersei's undoing is her refusal to pay off the Iron Bank debts, because they just turn on the entirety of Westeros and say, right, no more debts. Everyone needs to pay up now. And everyone is suffering as a result of it. So I can imagine it doesn't matter who you are or, you know, what your titles are, etc. It's the Iron Bank who calls the shots. So I think there's going to be a lot of hate for her. Anyone who might have once been an ally, who's suffering as a result of that. I think it's all a bit up in the air. I think that was such a bad move from her. It's gold at the end of the day. Everything comes down to gold. So any allies she thought she might have had, it depends how they've done as a result of her actions with that. I do think it is sort of heavily implied that everyone around her is just telling her what she wants to hear anyway. So I can't really think now that there's not going to be a Kevin, I cannot really think of anyone, perhaps Jamie, who's really going to be on her side for the right reasons because they care about her.
Yeah. You know, the other person that's interesting, she has Sir Robert Strong, right? Right. Qyburn.
I'm going to talk more about Sir Robert Strong. I'll dive into the text, but yeah, go ahead. I didn't know if you were going to dive into him or not.
Oh, no. I just was saying like that. Oh, you're looking for allies around him, you know, looking for around Cersei.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out like who are those people that she could still would go to and confide in, because the Merryweathers like fled, you know, and there was this idea of bringing them back perhaps by Kevin, but they're gone. That looks suspicious, you know. So as close as they were to her, it was all an information grab and all plotting to kind of, you know, imprison or get Cersei in trouble with the Faith. I mean, there's a double cross going on there. So yeah, I think she has to look for her allies, and we're trying to figure out like who is that. And I think what the show did, again, hate to say this, but they kind of it's the full on throw your armor on. Like it was a visually representative, like she almost has like she's armored up in the sense that she's not letting anybody in. No one's coming into her bedchamber. She's not making marriage alliances. She's not doing that. So she's going to really harden up, I feel like. And that's something that even to the point where even Jaime couldn't maybe break through that if he did come back. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, she's doing stuff. I like to bring up these little houses sometimes. House Stokeworth, right? So you had Lully's, you had Sir Bronn who's going over there. She's got this whole plot with Falsy Stokeworth to like kill Bronn and do different stuff there. So yeah, like who's gonna inherit? Because the big piece with Nikki said the bank, the Iron Bank is not backing them. They can't buy the food that they need. The people will turn on Cersei. And this is what Tyrion sort of realized, is that's why you needed House Rosby and you needed the Stokeworth.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Family, those surrounding houses, like George is really good at making it realistic, and that like we need their harvest, we need food and resources and things like that, and that plays into this. It's something that makes it a lot more believable and more politically kind of stirring, I guess. So yeah, I just think it's interesting to keep an eye on all of those little houses or people that she might turn to or that have turned against her because she's plotting to kill Bronn and the likes of, you know, like she's distancing her. She like allies that she could have had. They're not following. They're not winning, or she's done something. And then whoever takes their place is like not a fan of Cersei's. So
yeah, as it's so perfect that you bring that up, because this is the point I was going to dive into. So yeah. Dive into the text here. So first of all, this chapter, by the way, and just re-looking over it, is where George R. R. Martin shows to everyone that he is like an absolute god when it comes to writing, because it's insane. So the chapter, Cersei's final chapter of A Dance with Dragons, starts, and she's like on the last night of her imprisonment. This is the, you know, like walk of shame, everything. She's gonna all have guards. They'll keep the crowds away. No one will be allowed to touch me. The High Sparrow had promised me as much. Even though then she's afraid, right? And she's beginning to pace her cell, restless as the caged lions that lived in the bowels of Casterly Rock when she was a girl, the legacy of her grandfather's time. She and Jaime used to dare each other to climb into the cage, right? But the whole point is she's thinking all of these things. I'll have guards. They'll protect me. No one's going to like hurt me. And then she's thinking about like lions and like, you know, being a Lannister and all of this stuff. Well, she goes on the Walk of Shame. It obviously goes a different direction than she thinks. Mm-hmm. And she's humiliated. And it's just like, you know, terrible event for her. Justified, maybe, but, you know, terrible, like yeah. terrible event, however you want to view it. And then at the very end, the way this chapter ends is after she's done this entire thing. Is, you know her savior was real, 8 feet tall or maybe taller, and it's Robert Strong, this monster character that came from Qyburn, right, but still in a way sort of her design, is now like her number one ally, is this like monstrous creature who's like, you know, probably bound through some sort of weird, you know, like blood magic science, whatever, right. To Cersei, is her like number one ally, after she starts the chapter thinking like, I still live in this world where I'm the queen and everyone has to bow to me. And then she's forced to face reality that no, you're human just like everyone else. And now, after going through all of that, and she's probably like hateful and angry and going through every emotion imaginable, she's given, you know, Robert Strong. It's like, okay, I know what I'm going to do now. Everyone who's ever wronged me, like, get ready.
Like, yeah
get ready, like, this, yeah. So I mean, I full-on mad queen is probably like what's
isn't
next.
Robert controlled by Qyburn, or that sort of directed, because the Qyburn's an interesting one, because he seems to be very, very open to Cersei's madness. And I wonder if that's just simply because she's the only one who's allowed him to do it. And if that suddenly stops for whatever reason, how quickly would he be to turn on her? If that kind of like makes sense. And I do wonder if he's the one in control of Robert Strong, or sort of directing him. Is that going to go wrong for her at some point?
Yeah, it could. Another big thing with that, and that's a really good point, Nikki, like that people wonder where Qyburn came from and who is he loyal to, and like, who is he maybe working for? Did he have him? I mean, is he just some wayward agent of, I don't know, like not chaos necessarily, but like what are his goals and his motivations? Is someone paying him? Is he working for someone? He's this disgraced maester who now is experimenting and doing all these crazy stuff. And we see him at a scary place in Harrenhal, right? And then he ends up, you know, being there, helping out with Tywin's, you know, when Shay is found and all that kind of stuff. So he's just there. She just sort of like brings him in. It's almost like one of the mistakes that I think she makes is she has so much mistrust of the people right in front of her, right around her, that if you're new and if you're in the back, she's, because that's what Qyburn really was. She like brings him in out of nowhere and just sort of like gets some loyalty pledges from him. And then he's with her. But where did that guy really come from? And is he really, how long is he going to, you know, stay close to Cersei or power? Or because I think also he just wants to maybe do his thing. And if whoever he thinks is going to allow him to continue his experiments and do his work, right? Maybe he's going to.
I do wonder if it is as simple as that. But yeah, if it got to a point where, you know, someone else said, oh, I can give you a much better laboratory. I can give you X, Y, and Z. All you've got to do is turn him on Cersei. Okay, fine. Could it be as straightforward as that with him? Because like you say, where do his loyalties truly lie?
Yeah. Yeah. And
we just don't know.
Right. We don't know. And another thing, the wordplay, the color association around Cersei is all from the get-go. And I truly believe this. Like, I know that there's these breadcrumbs that are laid in like a Clash of Kings. And then they pay off at the end of that book. But what George has shown, or what I believe he's doing, is that like we think we've seen the end of something, like we like a prophecy, or we've seen so okay, wildfire, right? Cersei has all of this the green, the emerald, the black, all the different color wordplay around her suggests that she's into wildfire and has some sort of a connection with it, right? And it's like something that Tyrion then sort of takes and they use it to defend the city. But then later on in the show shows us that she's obsessed with it and she uses it as a tool later to destroy the Sept of Baelor. So if the Robert Strong situation doesn't work out, it's one of those things that like George could come back to that. Like, remember I told you I showed you in the beginning that she's used this tool before. When all else fails, when people around her, agents or whatever, fail, she became obsessed with this, and it's a tool that she might use to destroy, wreck the city, do something before young Griff comes in, like if the Tyrells are defeated, or maybe something happens with her son. I mean, if the Sand Snakes do end up killing Myrcella, or Myrcella kills herself, she could just say dunzo and wildfire this whole thing and be kind of done with it. So I don't think that's done. I think people think that this whole wildfire piece was over because it was over after the Battle of the Blackwater Bay. And Matt has found a lot of suggestions that like when George makes a connection that we think like sort of, I don't know, the saddest sound is the bells, right. was the coolest thing I've ever heard. Like that Matt kind of came, like figured out the idea that the Ghost of High Heart was talking about the Red Wedding. And everyone says, well, the saddest sound was the little bells, the innocent who was killed, that Catelyn kills. But then all along, there's this other element that the saddest sound could also be the bells, the episode, the bells that was ringing when King's Landing was destroyed, and that George does that kind of stuff. And I mean, the show is the showism, right. But like, could he be doing more of that kind of stuff with the Lannister characters who have been around since the beginning?
I think a lot of times we view prophecies and we sort of think once one lines up with something, like a lot of the stuff that Patchface says, it's like, okay, well, that he says at the beginning of like book two, and then a lot of it could die directly into the Battle of the Blackwater. Well, I don't know. It could, but it could also reference something we haven't even seen yet, that like, and it's almost like George, who's like the master manipulator, is saying, oh, I actually set you up to think it was going to be this, but it's actually this other thing, like down the line. Cause that's what he does all the time. I mean, that's what he does. Like, his entire arc is like, I'm gonna set you up here, but nope, it's actually like a triple fake. He's like, you know, got quadruple agents and everything like that. So real quick, just one more thing here on Cersei, then we can move on. Because like what you guys are saying here about this, I just wanted to this last little bit of the chapter two, the final Cersei chapter, as she's walking, right, she's thinking about all this stuff, and then it says, no, her savior was real, 8 feet tall or maybe taller, with legs as thick around as trees. He had a chest worthy of a plow horse and shoulders that would not disgrace an ox. His armor was plate steel, enameled white and bright as a maiden's hopes, and worn over gilded mail. Remember, this is all, everything that George sort of writes through a character's point of view is like incredibly important. You know, she thinks she's dreaming, and then she herself is given a white cloak. Like, Tommen names her, Tommen, her precious little boy, had named her a champion to the Kingsguard. So is she in a like a better place strategically after the Walk of Shame? Because she has to go through this terrible ordeal, and then she's given a white cloak as a champion of the Kingsguard, and she's given Robert Strong, who she views as like her savior. And then, as the line you say here too, I mean, this is just George doing it. Cersei never saw where Qyburn came from.
Yeah,
of course. I know. It's of course it's literally him. Just she didn't see where he walked out of this time, but nobody ever saw where he actually came from.
Matt. That okay. Sorry, Nikki. This is the kind of stuff that we like freak out about, right?
No, it's
like,
cool.
Right. Cersei never saw where Qyburn came from. None of us know where freaking Qyburn came from. And that's what I'm talking about, George. That's why I love this series. And it's freaking great, you know? Well, let me ask Nikki a question, too, about this. Like, do you think, just a couple things, and you don't ever have to commit to anything, because I'm super noncommittal. I'm sort of like, you know what? this could go any one direction, which is why I love reading multiple theories. So, I love theorists, too. God bless them. They're willing to, like, lay down in writing, I believe it's going to happen this way, then this way, then this way, then this way. I'm not very good at doing that. I like to, like, think of 100 different ways it could go. But do you think that, a couple things, the Septa Baelor, do you think Cersei will get to a point where she might use that? Because Matt said she's in this position where she has a champion, she's back protected, she will never let herself go probably near the Faith again. Any thoughts on that? Like would we see something, or maybe not even that, but just something like it?
I don't think we're done with the wildfire at all. She'll use that, I think.
Yeah.
Whether it's on the Sept of Baelor, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if it went down that way, and I don't think it would feel out of character for her to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just what steps she takes to sort of get to that decision. That's what I would be interested to see. But if it's not the Sept, it will be something else. She will 100% blow something up. She already did it with the Tower of the Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she's not, it's not beneath her by any means.
Right. Yeah. And what is it true that wasn't she the one in, doesn't she originally kind of amassing the wildfire? Is that right? In Clash of Kings, I think, because remember Tyrion figures out that Cersei is doing that. And then he's like, okay, actually not a bad idea. Like we could use that. She's crazily amassing. Right. Wildfire, that's like her, that's not like anyone else really coming up with that. So
is it, yeah, isn't it, does Lancel tell him, doesn't he, is it Lancel who's the one who tells him when he threatens Lancel, and he's like, oh okay, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna have that because he wants to wind her up basically and he'll make good use out of it. So yeah, it is Cersei who was gathering all of that for what reason we don't know.
Yeah, just sort of a wild thing. You think, like, did she have any strategy in how she was going to use that? You know, because it's Tyrion who comes up with the strategy. She had something else in mind, which I think is something she'll go back to later and say, you know what? It's time to go back to plan A. And
Yeah. Because right now, I would say it feels like Cersei, because Cersei's final line is when she looks at Robert Strong, she says, yes. Oh, yes, is like the final, like her final line. Like, oh, God, here we go. So, you know, I think there's a few directions that she could go, because at this point, I'm pretty sure in the show, Marcella's dead, right?
In the show,
she's dead. Tommen is still alive, but Tommen's kind of intertwined with the Faith because she hasn't blown up the Sept of Baelor yet. So obviously, we can just dive into these two characters quickly, like Tommen and Marcella, because it kind of ties in ultimately to what's going to happen with Cersei. I'm kind of a believer, and I think that Robert Strong is going to go down in Clegane Bowl, which I think that the Hound is like the groundskeeper or whatever at the Gravedigger, and he's like at a monastery or whatever. And I think that like the Faith could choose him as a champion, since he's like tied in maybe right now with the Faith. And then we could have the Game Bowl happen earlier than it happens in the show. And maybe like they do have a trial by combat. If that were to happen and Cersei were to lose, then it could be like, okay, now Cersei has to go to the Sept of Baelor as her punishment. She could still blow it up. But some of that's going to depend on Marcella and Tommen. You know, I think ultimately to where George would want this event to happen after this and this, because I don't think Tom is jumping out of a window and killing himself at all. And as and I've talked about the possibility, man, it seems like Marcella, she's still so important because she could like get further entwined with the Dorne. I mean, there's so many different angles that she could go in than her just getting killed, because they already maimed her. And so I think if George was going to kill her, he would have already done it. So I think the show is like, well, we just got to figure something out. So I mean, Nick, like, what do you kind of think of like Marcella and Tommen?
Tommen, I'm not sure, because isn't he like 8 or 9 years old?
Yeah, he's young
at this point in the books. Yeah, he's a baby. I really don't know, because he's so impressionable, bless him. I don't really know where Tommen would go. I think going back to what you guys said earlier about maybe Jaime going back to King's Landing, I think it would depend on, like, I really like what you've just said about Cersei losing a trial by combat, because that just pushes her further into desperation, and she does stupid things when she's desperate. So would Jaime go and take Tommen out of King's Landing, knowing that something was going to happen? Marcella, I don't know, because was it Arianne Martell was planning to crown her and start a war?
Yes.
So, because the Dornish plot is a bit up in the air now, because they've just learned that Aegon's alive and is back in Storm's End. So I'm just kind of like branching out. It's really tough. I suppose it depends on sort of how, what's the word I'm looking for? How absorbed Marcella is with the Dornish and with the Martells. Because I think she's going to have to pick a side soon, definitely.
Yeah, and the one bit we were trying to think, you know, this sucks that we try to do this, but we try to match, like if there is a suicide among, like, Cersei's children, if it weren't Tommen, we were like, well, could it be Marcella, right, Matt? I mean, we kind of thought maybe...
Yeah, we talked about that once. The idea that maybe...
Like Prince Trystane, if he's
gets killed,
yeah.
Maybe like even Cersei has him killed or something, like, and well, then that was she, a
plot. There was a plot already, to kill him,
and so then she like really loves him, and then so then it's like Cersei. To me, that's more, especially book Cersei. I think she, like, Tommen is there, but it's really like her daughter is the one like that. You feel like there's like, that's, she really, you know, when Tyrion sends her away, it's like the, like, she's so much more like bloodthirsty at him than she is in the show. I think she is in the show too. Yes. It's just, we just don't get to see more of it as you do in the books, but the, like, the idea, I could see that going, cause Tommen, I just don't see an 8-year-old kid jumping out of a window, like, to kill him. It just, I mean, I'm not saying he's gonna live. I think there's a lot of other ways to kill him, but I just don't see it being that way. And I think if you did flip it around, I could see Cersei going even that much more mad, where she thought she was doing the right thing for her daughter and her daughter killed herself. But again, her daughter could also be the younger and more beautiful queen that ultimately is the reason Cersei gets like taken out.
I like that. Right. There's another bit too, just with this whole poisoning. So again, Marcella in the show was poisoned, but Tommen right now is supposedly being poisoned. We don't know, by, like, he's a food taster. One of the Kingsguard members is tasting his food and looks like he's getting sick. So again, Varys, who knows what freaking is that him, or is that working someone else working from the shadows? You know, so the poisoning seems to be happening right now, an attempt, anyways, on Tommen. There's possibly a way in which Marcella could commit suicide, and again, all of this stuff further just drives to the madness, maybe, of Cersei, and as Nikki said, just being more desperate and wanting, grasping for straws, if you will. So,
okay. Well, the final character here, and now this is a real gear shift. We're going to talk about Tyrion, right? Who's on the total opposite side of the world. So,
God.
And this one, and right, so Tyrion, I mean, he's over in Essos doing his whole thing, right? So I'll just read the last little bit from the wiki here. So while aboard the Salazori Cohorin, Tyrion makes the acquaintance of Mokoro, who sees visions in flames. Tyrion, Penny, and Jorah are captured by a Yunkai slaver and are brought by Yezanin Zaquas. They are instructed by his overseer on how to treat their new master. Tyrion and Penny are forced to perform a mock joust in the fighting pits of Meereen, not knowing that they were to be eaten by lions at the end of the show. Daenerys Targaryen, for whom the show was staged, learns of their impending fate and stops before the lions are released. After their new master dies of the blood flux, the trio escapes. Tyrion arranges for the three to join a sellsword company, the Second Sons, under the command of Brown Ben Plum, by promising the company the wealth of Casterly Rock. While the Sun's current contract is to fight Daenerys, Tyrion hopes to win them to her side. So, Nikki, Tyrion and Winterwater. Now, this was obviously like a total shift of gear from everybody else because this is all Essos and really what's going on with Daenerys. That's where we're at too. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing about Tyrion up till now is he's worked out who John Connington and Aegon, he's worked out who Griff and Young Griff are, and he was advising them pretty much. So I'll be interested to see what happens when if he meets Daenerys and what he kind of divulges to her, because Daenerys is very much dead set on the throne being hers, as Aegon will be as well. So is Tyrion going to play the two off against each other? Because does he really care what happens to his sister at this point? That's what I want to know. Whose side is he going to be on? Because he's clearly not on the Lannister side. It is a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would argue, I think Tyrion at this point, you know, and Tyrion's also like not necessarily going mad, but Tyrion's definitely having like a shift in character.
Yes.
Certainly in A Dance of Dragons. And he's not necessarily like, I wouldn't say he's like full on evil, but he's definitely going darker and darker. Like it feels like that he's definitely going down this path. Ultimately, for me, Tyrion's gonna have to. I know that he's gonna have at least one more meetup with Cersei and Jaime, and I don't know how that's gonna go, but he definitely has sort of unfinished business with them. So he's gonna come over with Daenerys somehow. And for me, that tells me that Daenerys and Euron, like Euron stuff, probably isn't happening. Like, I don't think that like any stuff that could potentially happen with Euron. Because I think he's sort of a block for Daenerys to get over to Westeros. Like, it seems like he's over there and they're going to meet up and do something. That might all just take place in Westeros. We could just get like a full on crazy, like mega war going on in King's Landing. And like the final thing where it's literally like Euron's there trying to take over. Young Griff's there trying to take over. Cersei's trying to hold the fort down. Daenerys is there. And it's just like the war of every king imaginable, including the Night King. Why not? In King's Landing. Like everybody's fighting everybody. And whoever wins, wins. It's just free for all. But so Tyrion, for me, has to come back over and has to have one final showdown with Cersei and Jaime, just for moments. It doesn't have to be a showdown, but just there's gonna be moments there. But is that the final book? Because I guess so much of it depends on, is Daenerys sailing back? Will Daenerys step on Westeros soil by the end of this book, by the middle of this book? Or does she just set sail and then she doesn't show up until the next book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, I'm just thinking about Tyrion here. As you say, Matt, he's going to go have that confrontation. What is his role going to be? What can he offer? I mean, right now he's with Brown Ben Plum and trying to convince him. I mean, maybe Brown Ben Plum's already, he's already done sort of has been working for Danny, right? Or something. Explains why they switch sides, and then Tyrion's convincing him to come back over. Danny's out of the city. The Winds of Winter chapter, which we haven't really talked a lot about those in here. We just kind of stick right to what we have because they could be changing. But it is suggested that they are defending that city, and I think Danny will come back and reward those who did well or who worked in her service. I think if she were there and met Tyrion originally, it'd be kind of like a no-go maybe, just based upon name and all that kind of stuff. But if he does something and proves himself and other members can kind of say, hey, Tyrion's done well here. And as Nikki was saying, like provides information about John Connington and Young Griff and Aegon, all that kind of stuff. That could be really cool to see how, you know, they're going to, it makes him more valuable. Because my other big thing is I think Marwyn the Mage is on his way over to kind of be like an advisor to her. And so Tyrion likes Varys. He's been with Illyrio. He's actually seen quite a bit of this other big plot that's he's starting to get some of the pieces. The Sivas game is very important because he's a master player of that. And I think he's going to start to kind of figure a lot of this out, and he's going to be pro Danny. But then it's just like, can they do the ultimate pack, the ultimate merger of young Griff or Aegon and Danny? Is this possible? Can they pull this off? Or is she going to be so turned off by another marriage proposal and she's just going to go full dragon and say, no, screw this, I'm doing my thing? And is Tyrion going to get caught up in that whole, I guess, whirlwind of trying to make this happen, seeing what's good for her, but she's so gone, like so far gone, maybe, that she just says, no, I'm going to come in and rule with fire and blood. You know, she might just come in and do that. So I don't know how the whole Jaime/Cersei interaction is going to go, but I just see him being in the mix of all of that. And I think, you know, we're not going to get like a Jon Snow, Danny kind of thing romance, necessarily. That kind of stuff.
I don't think so.
No.
That's just show stuff right there. So that's where I think, like, maybe she does have someone who, if it's this young Griff character, but if they've deceived her in some way, right. If they, again, they sold her to the Dothraki. They did not give her, they said they were going to give Viserys this army, but they also sent Viserys. He went with Khal Drogo, and secretly Illyrio had another Targaryen that he didn't tell her about. You know what I mean? Like this could break down either way. It could be very fracturing actually too, just depending on how they present this information, like John Connington, all this stuff. That's going to be really, really tough for Dany to hear. You know, in the show, there's this whole bit where when she learns that people like Jon Snow more than her, look at that, I'm an imposter, I'm whatever, they're propping him up. And now young Griff is already, he's already on my turf trying to go after my throne. I don't know that it's going to go, I don't know how it's going to shake out. I think that would kind of maybe be upsetting for her. I don't know. Any thoughts on that stuff, Nikki? Just
That's, I think, like you say, that's what it's going to come down to, how Dany reacts to learning about Aegon. Because I think she mentions him in earlier books and talks about, like, oh, I probably would have married him if I didn't marry Viserys. So is that going to be suggested to her? And how receptive is she going to be to that? Because like you say, how is she going to react to, hang on, so you guys all knew about this and you never said anything. You've just let me go off and do this. And now you're saying that the throne isn't even mine. So I think what Tyrion does is going to be very heavily dependent on how Daenerys reacts to learning all this information that she's not the last Targaryen and not even the real heir, technically.
Mm-hmm.
But is Tyrion going to play those two off against each other, or is he going to sort of suggest some kind of union between the two? That's where I can see him going to then eventually come back to Westeros to have that interaction with Jaime and Cersei.
Yeah. You know, it could be interesting because, so I just wanted, I had to look up some history on the Second Sons, because obviously they're not the Golden Company, but because that's, I think, the first sort of company, you know, sellsword company we think of, because, and then of course their ties to the Blackfyres and all that stuff. But the Second Sons, Aegon Bittersteel did serve with them for a bit before he left to found the Golden Company. Oberyn Martell served with them for a little bit. It's kind of interesting, really. However, I'm kind of thinking, maybe what if Tyrion learns about, like, more of the sort of Blackfyre lineage that's tied to the Golden Company, and then he begins to piece together, wait, maybe young Griff isn't actually the son of Rhaegar. Maybe he's a false prince. So then that could tie a few things together. Tyrion could know he's false and pretend to tell Dany, or this could be how Dany learns kind of the idea through Tyrion that young Griff isn't the real deal. Maybe the Mummer's Dragon, right? Which part of her prophecy. And so you could get on that. And then Tyrion is the one who sort of advises her on this. And he could lie to her and tell her, like, hey, no, he's the real deal. Maybe her and Griff, and he proposes this marriage, then maybe young Griff is the one who betrays her for love. So there's definitely some ways that Tyrion could actually be that sort of that folk, that hinge in a handful of those ideas and theories.
Mm-hmm. I can see Ez searching now.
Wow, yeah,
I can see the screens in his eyes.
Because you bring up a really cool point that the historically you got the Tattered Prince connected. You've got Oberyn, you just mentioned Dorne, and then Bittersteel was there and then founded the Golden Company. Right. So it's this offshoot from the Second Sons, and they actually have kind of a bitter. Not opinion. Like they almost jealous of the Golden Company.
They're not as good.
They're competing. You know, they're kind of competing. So that will be interesting to see if she gets what she looks like she's going to get. Like Dany has the Second Sons, as you said, and then the Golden Company now belong to or are working for young Griff Aegon. That's going to be interesting. It's maybe something that George is doing symbolically or trying to hide clues in there as to what's going to happen. And you said a good word is hinge, that like Tyrion, it could hinge this either way, right? He could either bring it together, bring it apart. Yeah. Interesting.
Cool. So. Okay. All right. Well, I think
is there any other Lannister left besides Lancel? I just think he's kind of gonna, I don't know. He's
screw Lancel.
He's probably gonna die.
He's
just probably gonna die. That's where we're at on that. So cool. Okay. Did anybody have any final thoughts on any Lannisters? Anything else we wanted to dive into? Ez, Nikki, anything?
I don't think so. I think it's like you guys have said, I think the problem is it's just so many different ways it could go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm just happy, Matt, that we have a Lannister loyalist here among us who is pushing for their arc, because I did what George wanted us to do, which was to hate them. Right. Mm-hmm. And then now through Jaime and Tyrion, I'm like, let's go a little bit. You know what I mean? He does such a good job of that. I'm like, I hate these guys. Hate them. And then right away, I'm a little bit of me is like, well, maybe that Tyrion guy's not too bad. And then
that's great.
Right. I just, you know, what an author wants to take you on that journey, I totally bought into, and he totally did that. It's perfect, because Jamie later on were like, you know what? Actually, I know you pushed Bran out that window, but I'm in.
Jamie won for me, because I watched the show and then I dove back into the books. But Jamie won of A Storm of Swords was where I was like, where I like fell in love with the books, because first of all, A Storm of Swords, I don't know, it's pretty much widely considered to be the best book in the series. I think it is. Our good friend Sir Jimmy, who runs a fantasy book thing, he says it's like his favorite book of all time. He says it's like an absolute god tier sort of like fantasy book, because for me, the second you dive into A Storm of Swords and it starts with Jaime, this character who's been sort of off screens, who's been totally portrayed as a villain the entire time up to it, and then you get like his first chapter, it's like, oh man, this is just so good.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Just real quick, it's a good book. And just before we let Nikki go, I wanted to ask her just a couple of questions. I know you're probably like, guys, when can we take a pee break here? Because that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh my god. But anyways, real quick. So, do you have a favorite character? Like out of the whole series, is there one? I know that we've mentioned Lannisters. Is there one of them in particular? And then also, is there any not that we have to dive into the theory or anything at all, but like, are there any theories or predictions that you've heard or read or come across or that your own that you're really like, I really like this idea or whatever? Because for me, one of my favorites has always been Lady Stoneheart, Beric Dondarrion, the Brotherhood Without Banners, all that I've been fascinated by that piece, and so I really like it. And anytime I get like a Lady Stoneheart theory, I'm into it. I want to like dive down that a bit more. Everyone loves Jon Snow, whatever, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So
Jamie's my favorite character for the exact reasons that you guys have just outlined. You start off hating him because he is just he doesn't have his own point of view chapters. You are seeing him through the eyes of the good guys. And then when you start to hear his narrative and you're like, oh God, right. Okay. I kind of, what you did was not okay, but I kind of get it now. Nothing he's ever done is ever sort of self-centered. He's always acting in the interest of other people. He's never really done anything for his own self-interests, and that's really interesting to look at for someone who's perceived to be a villain. I will say I wasn't a massive fan of Tywin in the books. I think he was just very much that sort of ruthless military sort of character. The minute Charles Dance came on screen, that was it. Like, Tywin became my favorite immediately. Yeah. And it just changed the way that I looked at him in the books. So Jaime and Tywin, definitely. Mad theories.
I know, on the spot, kind of, but...
Yeah, no, it's cool. I wonder, is Lady Stoneheart going to be the one to resurrect Jon Snow?
Oh.
Because...
Yeah,
Rob named him as his heir.
Mm-hmm.
So... Mm-hmm. At this point, I mean, I suppose she will know that Sansa's alive, whether she believes it or not. She's desperate. And, is she going to go up to Castle Black to kind of, is there a way that she can get Jon Snow, find out that he's dead? She has the power with the Brotherhood to resurrect him. Is it going to be her fulfilling Rob's final order, if that makes sense?
Wow.
So
Clearly Nikki's coming back at some point, so we can dive down that theory.
Kiss of Life.
Right. Yep. One of the things we joke about is that Ez always brings up, you know, we call it back to Lady Stoneheart, because he views her as like the key to everything. Mm-hmm. Like,
got to. It's super important. And it, like you said, it's a really cool thing. I mean, Melisandre, if she doesn't, or some, there's dissuaded in somewhere, or gets moved off of the, who knows? They put them on ice. I mean, the ice preserves, and then, you know, you bring down this life kiss, this whatever that Beric gave to her. By God, they did that whole thing with Beric Dondarrion in the show. They took him as far as the wall. So who knows? Maybe that is something, an arc that Lady Stoneheart goes down, or I don't know. That's Brill.
There's just too much. Yeah. In Kat's chapters, especially when she talks about how much she dislikes Jon Snow, there's just too much of that. It's talked about too much for someone that she shouldn't really care about. Mm-hmm. She just has this loathing, and her objection when Rob said, "I'm going to legitimize him. He's Jon Stark now, and he is my heir." And she, you know, she didn't like it. She wasn't going to, you know, tell the king no in front of all his men. I just think that would be perfect if it was her.
It would.
To be the one to do it.
God, it would.
Awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome. Okay. Hey, Nikki, but thank you for joining us. Seriously, thank you so much. This is so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we will definitely have to bring you back on, because I really want to dive down that Lady Stoneheart theory. And I'm sure Ez does, because he's a Lady Stoneheart loyalist. Absolutely. All right. So, everybody go check out her TikTok. It is Kale, as in, you know, the, like, K-A-L-E.
The vegetable.
There's the word I was looking for. You know, you can tell how many vegetables I eat when I can't even remember the word. Kale. EC, where there's an underscore after Kale. So thank you so much again. Everybody go check her out. You can follow Ez and I at Super Games Bros and at WompRat_2M. So as always, we want to thank you guys for playing the Game of Thrones. I don't know what we're going to be discussing next time. Hopefully the House of the Dragon Super Bowl commercial. Let's go. This episode will be coming out the Sunday after the Super Bowl. On the podcast.
Well, we've already covered it.
Hopefully. Well, maybe. Who knows? But who knows? Hopefully Ezra's Bengals get a win tonight, you know?
Yeah. So, thanks, man.
Just got to throw that out there, man. I'm rooting for you. Yeah. Right. So anyway, guys, as always, I want to thank you for watching. For those of you who are watching on YouTube, thank you for listening. We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.